guy, which is ironic.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini-episode number 802. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your favorite football talking digging series anywhere, breaking it all down for you. It is the NFL divisional round that we now have upon us. Our picks from last week were decent overall here. I went 3-1 on the games, and Kyle last week, I believe 3-0, if I'm looking at this correctly here. So congratulations.
Hey.
Kyle, a good weekend
decent.
For you. I
was selling us short.
I was looking pretty good until old Boat Shoes Beckham there started dropping passes, and then it all kind
of
went awry.
Of course, that's going to be your hot take this week. What a shitty take that is. I'll get to that later on.
We predicted what a dumpster fire last weekend was going to be.
Yes.
I think we actually undersold it. When it's all said and done, as much as we piled on the games, it wasn't nearly enough. We were not nearly brutal enough to the NFL for serving us this shiznit Sunday and making us smile while we watched it last week here. This weekend's games will, of course, be much better, and the only one that belongs on the dump pile with last weekend, at the very least, I think that point spread is going to keep people in doubt, at least until the second half.
See, it was dumb talking points from the usual folks. I'm not going to lump you in with them because you're sharper than those. But what the hell, man? I thought this was the NFL. I thought it's supposed to be sweet. Folks, we told you last weekend's games weren't going to be good. It boiled down to this for me. The overrated teams, we just got rid of them. I wasn't surprised at anything that happened last week. I've been banging the drum that the Lions weren't very good. Been banging the drum that Miami wasn't very good. Oakland, Houston, both aren't very good, but somebody had to win. And the Giants, okay, that game shaped up as the best of the weekend with the Packers, but the Giants were slightly overrated too, I think. They're a big regression team for me next year. The teams that all lost last weekend all make my regression list for 2017, I can assure you.
Absolutely. And every year there's this whole thing of how big the turnover is going into the playoffs the next year. This is going to be one of the rare years where the bulk of the teams that don't make it next year, it's low-hanging fruit as far as picking against them. It's not going to be hard to say Miami and Houston and Detroit and – I'm not sure about Oakland, but at least a couple of the other ones. The Giants, I think you're right about, just because the NFC, quite frankly, it's harder to make the playoffs. So I think this is going to be one of these rare situations where we can kind of look at this, and most of the teams that don't return next year are going to be pretty obvious.
Yeah, and there was a pretty big turnover this year, if I'm thinking correct. Wasn't half the teams in this year's playoff field are new? That's a pretty high number compared to past years. It was usually 7 or 8 the last couple of years. It's never been more than 8, and I don't believe it's ever been less than 4 since they instituted the current playoff format in 1990. But 6 is a pretty high number. But you said it, 3 of the 4 games this week shape up pretty good. My top 7 teams in the league are all left, and then there's Houston, of course, as well. So let's get at it. I think the lines are all pretty tight this week, too. It's pretty tough. Pick some winners this week.
Yeah, this is going to be very, very challenging at this point. I've been talking about trying to get above 52.4% for the season here. I was looking good until the last game last week, and I was on a winning streak going back to the end of week 17 here, the last couple of games, and then I don't have much margin for the Giants blowing that cover. Really kind of hurt me. I got to go 5-2 the rest of the way here. No margin for error, and this is going to be, I think, the toughest weekend looking at it here. So we'll see how it breaks down.
That's not that hard. 5-2? I mean, okay, yeah, you're patting yourself on the back if you go 5-2, but that's not that hard. I mean, you've undersold us last week. Yeah, I mean, you've undersold us so far. I mean, yeah, okay, in retrospect, Tom, Dick, and Harry are looking at last week's game, so, anyone could have picked those. Well, where were Tom, Dick, and Harry on Friday? I didn't hear from them.
That's true. And look,
I'll take my 3-0 all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say this. I hadn't heard as much as you apparently have as far as any of the mouth breathers talking about, oh, I thought this was the NFL. But if so, that only just proves to you that, again, there's a lot of the casuals and a lot of the folks that don't even really pay much attention to teams outside of their own during the regular season that are tuning in right about now. Because I think Helen Keller could have told you last week that most of those teams that were in there were undeserving. So if there's really anybody acting that surprised, I am shocked. I'm a little bit shocked also, too, at the playoff schedule. And we'll get to that more so with the second game because I cannot believe that one's in prime time. But we start at the Georgia.
Hold on. Can I jump in?
Eastern. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. You know, it's really funny. You've been doing this with me for a while, and you know that typically I'm an underdog guy. But, you know, last week I cashed three favorites. And then the favorites were 4-0
right
against the spread. The game I abstained from was Houston-Oakland. You know, the NFL, there's a perception, and it's typically wrong, I think, and it's what I exploited last week, that playoff teams, because they're in the playoffs, they're kind of even. And I think most people
right
didn't grasp just how big that gap was between the contenders and the pretenders last week. The only other time really on the sports calendar where, you know, I see this much value on favorites is like the first weekend of March Madness, ironically, when, you know, everyone's got their bracket pool and they're trying to pick upsets. You know, it's gotten to a point now where, you know, you can get like 4 seeds against 13 laying 5 points, for God's sake.
Right. That's true.
Just wanted
That's
to say
true.
That.
The hipsterism from time to time the general public can come into play, no doubt about that, and make some of these favorites actually a little bit undervalued. But we start this weekend. We start Saturday afternoon, 4:35 Eastern time at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta for what should be a very good one, the 11-5-1 Seahawks at the 11-5 Falcons. Kevin Burkhardt, John Lynch, the delicious Pam Oliver, and Peter Schrager on the call here. Again, disappointed that my guy Kenny Albert, five-time lounge guest, not on the call for this game, but that's network politics. So, yeah, the Falcons laying 5 points in this one, up from 3.5 at the outset. It went to 4.5, so it's been steadily rising. These two teams, looking at how they rank in a couple of different metrics here, on the FDH season-ending power rankings, Atlanta 4, 22nd on strength of schedule, 9th on impressiveness of victories, 3rd on passing offensive yards, 5th on rushing offense yards, 28th on pass defense, 17th on rush defense. On DVOA, Atlanta is they're number 3. They're number 1 offensively, number 27 defensively. The starkest differential, I believe, of any of the teams in the playoff field this year. And, again, the numbers for Seattle, they were 8th on our season-ending power ranking, tied for 29th on strength of schedule. That division went from worst to first in just about 3 years. First to worst in about 3 years. 26th on impressiveness of victories, 10th on passing offense, 25th on rushing offense, uncharacteristic. 8th on passing defense, 7th on rushing defense, 9th in DVOA, 17th offensively, and 5th defensively. And a game where this is going to be defined by, again, how much Atlanta with what they're able to do with, as I saw the other day, I think it was on The Ringer, being characterized as a modern version of the fastest show on turf, what they're going to be able to do against the Seattle team with the Legion of Boom not being quite what they were. With Earl Thomas not in there. We talk about guys,
yep.
Part of my vocabulary on this show is talking about guys who are force multipliers, and he is, particularly when paired with Cam Chancellor. Now, they're talking about moving Cam Chancellor back off the line a little bit more to try to cover for that, so Cam Chancellor now diminished by having to help cover in that secondary for the role of Earl Thomas. I think you see where I'm going with the play for this one. I have to say, I normally mention this gentleman's name in a more positive context other than shooting in a hole in his theory, which I'm going to do here. Good friend, fellow member of the 21st Century Media Alliance, Ben Chu, an FDH Lounge dignitary and managing editor of that NBALotteryPick.com, a guy who's a Seahawk honk, who said to me, you know, I think that might be the one case you could make for an underdog over the weekend. And I said, really? Not that strong of a case. I mean, to think that Seattle might be the strongest dog in the field this weekend, I think is seeing things with rose-colored glasses with all due respect to Ben. You're right that this is a tight line. It's one that really makes you kind of ponder it when you look at it. There's nothing obvious about it, but I'm on Atlanta in this situation. I feel strongly that they're going to advance, and I have to say that they're going to cover this in the process.
Yeah, with all due respect to your buddy Ben, I disagree completely with what he said. You know, Seattle was my strongest pick of the wild card weekend, and my strongest pick of the divisional round is actually against Seattle. We've come full circle, Ricky, on the history of the program. It only feels like it was yesterday when we were talking about these two in a divisional matchup. Believe it or not, it was 5 years ago, though. Seattle going into Atlanta, that was kind of Seattle's breakout year. We, I believe, jokingly started making Bret Hart, Steve Austin metaphors when that game was over, in the sense that everyone knew when it was over that the loser was clearly the team that had the higher ceiling moving forward, that being Seattle. It was a wild game. Seattle fell behind big at the half, came back, but gave up a late field goal to lose. That is Matt Ryan's only playoff victory in his career, by the way. Still, to this day.
Wow.
Pretty crazy. Will Atlanta give the job back? No, I don't think so, Ricky. I think that Seattle, it's not fair to say that they've peaked because they don't have Earl Thomas, but my God, are they going to miss him against the number one offense in the game. And Atlanta is the number one offense in the game by a lot. You know, we somewhat undersold Seattle last week in terms of what they've been able to do this year. They were actually number two in yards per play differential. With Atlanta, they're also top five in yards per game differential, but number one in yards per play differential is Atlanta by a wide margin. In fact, the margin between them and Seattle, were the top two in that department, larger than the gap between number two and number 12. That tells you, you know, how many yards per play Atlanta's averaging. It just blows out the field. Seattle's last few road performances, Ricky, they've not been good. They barely beat the Niners at the end of the regular season. They had that dud against the Packers where they turned it over six times, and then they scored 5 points against Tampa Bay. This just then, you're going to need a little bit more than 5 points to cover a spread against the Atlanta Falcons in the Georgia Dome. I think that's safe to say. I'm on the Falcons here pretty big. I think they really run Seattle. You can't blow Seattle out. I mean, the only time I've seen it done really was that Green Bay game where they turn it over six times, but this is the first time in a long time where I'd say Seattle is a decided underdog. The Sharps like the Dirty Birds here as well. There was an article I read just a few hours ago kind of talking about line movement and whatnot. The question I have for you, though, and I'll throw it back to you, where do you stand on this Matt Ryan for MVP discussion? I don't know what your Twitter feed looks like, but – you know, Mike Wilbon, that tool, that worthless piece of crap that sits across from Tony Kornheiser, you know, fanning the flames again against the analytics community. Oh, you chumps need to watch sports. I guarantee you, every single person at Football Outsiders, despite being half the age of Mike Wilbon, has watched more football in their lives than that tool. I just wanted to say that. I mean, Matt Ryan for MVP, that kind of got lost there. Do you think he has a valid case?
I think so. Now, I'm not up on the specifics. I mean, he has to be on the short list anyways. He's a no-brainer for the short list, regardless of who you give it to. Now, what am I missing here on this? Is that pro or anti-analytics for me to say that?
Well, no, the analytics crowd is very, very big on Matt Ryan as the MVP this year. Now, he was named first-team All-Pro quarterback, which is usually a telltale sign that you're going to win the MVP because, you know, if you're not picking Matt Ryan, the guy that Wilbon was stumping for and the guy that other people are sitting with, Tom Brady. So Ryan's already kind of beaten Brady in one race there. But, you know, Wilbon was making a lot of, how does Ryan impact the game? You know, he was doing his Donald Trump real Skip Bayless,
wow.
You know, all caps on Twitter, horse manure. Okay, by the way, if you cover up Trump and Bayless's picture on Twitter, you would think it's the same person tweeting. They tweet the exact same way. In a related story, both are idiots.
Well, Can I say that of the two, just simply of the two, I'm glad we're getting the incoming president we are. You'd rather have a President Bayless? I just said of the two, Kyle. I'm limiting my choice here.
I think I'd rather have a golden shower on Shannon Sharp, though. I don't know about you.
Well, by the way, I have a historical take for you on the next game here. You went back on the lounge about 5 years to when we started doing this stuff week by week with Atlanta and Seattle, and I'm about to go full circle. I'm about to go even further back here as regards the next game. We're both in agreement on Atlanta. Up next, it's the 10-7 Texans at the 14-2 Patriots, 8:15 Eastern time. Gillette Stadium in Foxborough on CBS. How this ended up the CBS primetime game, I have no idea. Is it just because OMG Patriots equals ratings? I don't know. But
I think
Nance
so.
Sims, Wolfson, and Feely are on the call. Well, when you got them in against the Washington Generals, I'm not sure I exactly understand the reasoning on that. But I'll get to my historical point on this at the very end here. But in terms of how these teams match up, the line is – New England minus 15, opened at 15.5, went as high as 16, and has settled back in there as of taping time. New England number one in our FDH power rankings this year, but 32nd in strength of schedule. This is something I highlight with teams in the playoffs year to year. Teams that are glass jaw candidates. I highlighted it with Philly the first year that Chip Kelly was there because they didn't play anybody the regular season. And I highlighted it, I believe, with Carolina last year. So sometimes this plays itself out. New England 32nd, 20th in impressiveness of victories despite being 14-2, which tells you something. 4th in passing yards, 7th in rushing offense, 12th in pass defense, tied for 3rd in rush defense, 1st in DVOA, 2nd in offensive DVOA, 16th in defensive DVOA, and Houston. These numbers are starkly different. 16th in our power rankings, 17th in strength of schedule, 13th in impressiveness of victories, actually ahead of New England on that metric despite winning 4 less games, which tells you a little bit about the difference in strength of schedule. 29th in pass offense, 8th in rush defense, or rush offense, 2nd in pass defense, 12th in rush defense. DVOA, 29th overall, 30th offensively, 7th defensively. A game last week where Brock Osweiler, for once this season, didn't vomit all over himself, and you're getting everybody now with the whole thing like, OMG, has Brock Osweiler turned the corner? So there's been some of that predictable gaga coming out of that game here, but it is one that, again, sets up on paper as being a real turfing prospect here for New England to just really lay the wood to Houston on Saturday night. Ultimately, and I go back and forth on this one, I think that they will. I doubt that it's going to be anything that we're sweating in the fourth quarter. If Houston covers with one, that's the thing. If they surprise us, I think it'll be like a 7-10 point loss. I just have a weird feeling that this is not going to be in much doubt in the fourth quarter, and that New England, if they cover, and I think they will, they're going to have it in hand by the time the fourth quarter even starts. The cover, I mean. This is one where, again, I look at 14-2. New England is going to be trying to survive as a 14-2 team. 10 years to the date of the game being played, they ended the coaching career of Marty Schottenheimer. That was that famous New England-San Diego divisional game that happened on January 14th, 2007. Of course, that date better known for being the debut of the FDH Lounge and the second to last ever edition of Sunday Night Submission. You and the little guy were wrapping up. We were about to come in the studio and start when that New England-San Diego game, that shocker that ended in the 24-21 New England victory, 10 years to the date of that, New England, we hear talk about Bill O'Brien and his future in Houston. He's probably not done in the NFL regardless, but could he be getting turfed 10 years to the day that Marty coached his last game ever? And you know, when I realized that was Schottenheimer's last game, real levels of irony to this that, again, you know, in my youth being so disgusted that Art Modell blew Schottenheimer, ran him out of Cleveland, and everything like that. Little did I know that his last game ever would be on the debut day of the FBH Lounge, 10 years to the date, New England trying to avoid having the same thing happen to them, and of course they will. It's just a question of by how much, and I think they'll cover.
He gave me a lot there. First of all, happy 10-year anniversary. As soon as you brought that game up, the New England-San Diego game, where, yeah, San Diego was the number one seed. Too bad for them that, you know, their peak years, Philip Rivers was young. You know, Rivers had not gotten into the prime of his career when the team was at its peak under Schottenheimer.
Right.
As soon as you brought that game up, I remembered again. I'm like, yeah, I remember watching that at the old Sports Talk Network studio. And so I knew where you were going
yep.
with that. It was a big tip-off.
Okay.
You can't see a situation here late in the game where New England's up 20, Houston's got the ball, and they're driving, and if you're holding the Patriots ticket, you're cursing the TV. You can't see that happening?
It's a gut feeling. I mean, that's just totally a gut feeling. Is that so I'm going on that. I'm not going on hard evidence as much as I am with some of these other things here, which, again, show that New England is going to blow Houston out of the water if you just look at how the teams match up, notwithstanding the alleged, you know, surprising resurgence of Brock Osweiler. Well, we'll see what that gets him. That part there, Kyle, that's very unscientific. That's just me saying I don't think it's going to happen. I can't see it playing out in my head, but we'll see how it does play out.
Well, unscientific and your political persuasion have always gone hand in hand, so quite frankly, I'm not surprised. I'm not playing this game. And I'm going to give you some hard evidence why. First off, with Osweiler and this quote-unquote resurgence, I completely agree. It was not that impressive a performance. Really, as a team, it wasn't that impressive a performance by the Texans last week. They did win 27-14 handily. That game was pretty much over in the first quarter, but only 291 to 203 in total yardage over the Raiders. The key was the +3 turnover margin, not to mention the fact that Connor Cook was just simply not a viable NFL starting quarterback. That's just the bottom line. Houston on the road, not good this year. 2-6 straight up and against the number. They average only 14.7 points per game. Oh, my God. New England allows only 15.5 points per game at home, but it's kind of that DVOA indicates their D a little overrated. They've got that bend but don't break thing going where they're a lot higher in scoring defense than total defense. That's always worth noting. Also worth noting, New England's 13-3 against the number, very quietly, easily the league best. So they can't make the spreads high enough for this team. And a bad sign for Houston, Ricky. I got to bring first of all, every game this weekend is a regular season rematch. We should mention that. In this case, with Jacoby Brissett as the quarterback, New England won 27-0 against Houston in week 3. That's not a good sign for the Texans. However, total yards in that game were basically even. O'Brien, who you hate and want to run out of town, I have not heard that rumor that his job's on the line, and I think that is astounding that his job could be on the line. This guy's gone 9-7 three straight years with 8 of the shittiest quarterbacks humanly possible that you could ever imagine. I mean, this guy can't get a good quarterback to save his life. And I know it's his job to make him a little better, but, you know, he's winning with this rogues gallery. Talking about the little guy, I'll do a throwback there with that term, a real rogues gallery of quarterbacks.
Well, maybe it's that he can't coach up the quarterback that he has sufficiently.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of Lake. He just strikes me as one of these wannabe tough guys. I'm not a big fan of that coaching style, Kyle.
So you're telling me that bit you just told the people a little bit ago about him coaching for his job was fake news. You basically just made that up.
No. I heard that rumor.
Oh.
I'm not making that up. I really don't put any credence in it, especially with them having won the first round. I don't know. It was not just Twitter. It was getting reported on in some quarters that, like, rumors out of Houston, .. So, basically, make of that what you will, which is clearly not much.
Where was that? Yeah, where was it at? WeHateBillO'Brien.com? I mean, give me a break, Bill O'Brien getting fired. That'd be stupid. I sent you some notes, and I thought this was interesting. It's just, we can go through it a little bit here. highest spreads for an NFL playoff game in the last 23 years. This would only be the fourth to be above two touchdowns since 94. The last time we had a 14-point spread in the playoffs, New England at home, a Saturday night game against the infamous Tim Tebow Broncos. The Patriots covered that game with a lot of room to spare. As a matter of fact, teams laying 14 or more in the NFL playoffs since 94, 4-1 against the spread. Here are your top three. Super Bowl 29, yes, a Super Bowl set the record for the highest spread, San Francisco against San Diego in Super Bowl 29. That same Steve Young Niners team in the divisional round was laying 17.5 against Chicago. I don't remember a lot about the 94 Bears, I got to be honest with you. And then in 98, this was the last time we had a spread north of 14 points, the great, and I cannot stress enough, great 98 Vikings. That was when Randy Moss was a rookie, clobbered the Arizona Cardinals in the divisional round. So, you know, not really looking good for Houston here, but I'm passing. You know me, Ricky, if this was a regular season game, I would say take the points or pass. Well, it's the playoffs now. I'll say lay the points or pass.
I will say this. And my good friend, FDH Lounge dignitary Bob Benick, regards as the greatest tragedy of modern times the fact that we did not get a Broncos and Vikings Super Bowl in 98. That would have been huge. That really
I had actually written an article about that. That to me
it would have been the greatest Super Bowl that never happened.
That is the greatest Super Bowl that happened.
I would agree with that. Just off the top of my head, what about Patriots-Rams in the Super Bowl? Wasn't that north of two touchdowns?
I believe it was 13.5.
13.5, all righty. Well, that answers that. So
Maybe it was. Yeah, maybe I missed one. I don't know.
No, I don't think you did. Maybe it did settle back to 13.5. I know it was double digits. Everybody knows it was double digits, but it may or may not have been above two touchdowns. So we go to the Sunday games here. And I guess this answers why the Saturday night CBS game is when it is, because the other AFC game is on NBC. So tough luck, CBS, on that one there. It's the 12-5 Steelers at the 12-4 Chiefs, 1:05 Eastern time from Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City on NBC. Something fitting about this game being on NBC, because it's like, isn't that the last time consistently that the Chiefs were any good? We're like in the 90s with those NBC playoff games. They choked in all of them, but it's kind of fitting that this game's on NBC, because that's like the last time I remember them having a sustained stretch of being good. Michaels, Collinsworth, Tafoya, and Heather Cox are on the call. And this one, Kansas City is laying 1.5 after getting one at the open. So this is one of these ones that flipped here. Power ranking, Kansas City, I've got them 5. Their strength of schedule this year on the FDH index, 15th. Third on impressiveness of victories, 19th on passing offense, 15th on rushing offense, 18th on passing defense, and 26th on rushing defense. 6th on DVOA, 13th offensively, 14th defensively. Pittsburgh, 3rd on the power rankings, 26th on strength of schedule, 16th on impressiveness of victories. Tied for 5th on passing offense, 14th on rushing offense, 16th on pass defense, 13th on rush defense, 5th in DVOA, 8th offensively, 11th defensively. As befits the spread and the fact that both teams at various points in time during the week have been favored, probably the best closest game of the weekend on paper anyways, and a very, very tough one for me to pick. But one of the things I'm going to here, again, it's easy to make too much of this kind of stuff, but the whole notion of Roethlisberger in a walking boot after inexplicably getting left in the game last week, well after when he should have been in there, to factor in Justin Houston being in there. And this is one of the things that I've said to you, Kyle. Like, I know they're without Derek Johnson right now because he's gone out with an injury, but this Kansas City defense is not one I think that the numbers really do justice to, even the advanced statistics this year, because you can only grade this team when everybody's healthy and they're in there. Justin Houston, who I believe is going to be back and should be 100%, is one of the premier difference makers, force multipliers, if you will, in the league. So I don't put as much stock in some of Kansas City's uncharacteristically iffy defensive numbers as some people do, because I look at the circumstances. End of the day, I look at this one here. Tyreek Hill in there. for the offense to give them the extra dimension that he has this year that they have so often been lacking. I'm on Kansas City. I have said consistently the last 2 months or so, I think they're more for real than the average person probably thinks. Can they take New England next week? I still don't think so, but I think even that would be way more of a game than anybody believes right now. I'm on Kansas City.
In the waning moments of last week's show, I predicted a New England-Pittsburgh AFC Championship game, if you recall.
Yep.
But we did always give those famous three words, subject to change, at the end of that. Well, hope you didn't go betting Pittsburgh to make it to the AFC Championship game on my account, folks, because there's a little bit of a subject to change going on here. Let's go through this one. Had the Steelers remained a road favorite, they would have just been the sixth all-time in the division round era, which goes back to 90, the current format again. Those teams are only 1-4 against the spread all-time. The last time it happened, though, was the one win and cover. It was the Harbaugh Niners over the Panthers just a few years ago. That set up the infamous Richard Sherman game in the NFC Championship, which I watched from Las Vegas. That was a real hoot. Steelers last week beat the Dolphins 30-12. I'm kind of with you. You know I hate hot takes, and I always find a reason to go against them. But I was shocked Roethlisberger was in there late. They didn't dominate Miami as much as you'd think. It was only 367 to 305 total yardage, only late first down. And the script is flipped on the Steelers this week, Ricky. This is something I'm surprised you didn't bring up, actually. This is right out of your wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
The favorite in this game, like Pittsburgh last week with Miami, is the one looking for revenge in the rematch.
Right.
If you recall, Pittsburgh destroyed Kansas City in a Sunday night game at Heinz Field. That was the worst the Chiefs have looked, you know, maybe under Andy Reid, any game. Three things determine this one for me, okay? Four, if you include the Big Ben injury, which you're right, is a really big deal. And I looked it up while you were speaking. Justin Houston is a go. Steelers' red zone D has been ridiculous this year. That's not necessarily sustainable. We saw last week they came up with a couple big turnovers against Matt Moore. Kansas City typically does not take a lot of chances. You know, that can burn you and it can help you. It goes both ways. But if Kansas City can take care of the football and convert touchdowns on its red zone opportunities, they're in real good shape. I do worry about Andy Reid getting a little too Barry Goldwater, i.e. conservative, in the clutch. We have seen him screw himself before, and I ain't talking in the buffet line, all right? But one situation that he has always excelled at, off a bye, 19-2 in his career with an extra week to prepare. That includes 3-0 in the playoffs, oh, by the way. If Kansas City can force some turnovers, like I said, they're in real good shape. This was a team that I believe had the most added points from its defense and special teams in the league, and it wasn't close, actually, as I look. So that's a key factor. Roethlisberger, sometimes he has some stinkers. We know that. If he has a game like he had against Buffalo, remember when they still beat the Bills, even though they were like -3 in turnovers? They won't beat the Chiefs if they lose a turnover battle. We saw how big it was in the wild card round. Key number of three, you always poo-poo it, Rick Morris. I think you're wrong for doing so. I know favorites of less than three can be shaky in this round, but to me, three is the story here. Getting Kansas City under three is a value, and that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go with the Chiefs here. I have these teams kind of rated back-to-back in my power rankings. I actually do have the Steelers a little higher, but still I can't help but think that the Chiefs should be getting the token home field advantage at three. I'll lay it. I think Big Ben maybe makes an inopportune mistake here.
Very possibly because he's not 100%. And, again, I am somebody who's a notorious Pittsburgh hater, but I have another reason to be rooting for Kansas City in this one. I understand that my good friend and fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway has a nice – fat ticket at what I think is preseason dark horse odds on Kansas City to win the Super Bowl. He is actually planning to watch the Super Bowl so he can cash it there. So I am rooting for Chris on that one. I hope they can stay awake or alive another week here, and I believe but they will. We come to a game that I think is going to be the Sunday culmination to the weekend that we were looking for last week, but that the Packers did not allow us by blowing out the Giants. They did not allow us to have a five-star affair Sunday afternoon late. I think we may get it this week. It's the 11-6 Packers at the 13-3 Cowboys, the hottest team in the NFC against the team that's been the best team in the NFC the whole year, hence the number one seed, 4:40 Eastern time from AT&T Stadium in Arlington on Fox, the Fox A team of Buck, Aikman, Andrews, and Myers on the call. Dallas is laying 4.5 in this one, up from 4 initially. It's been right at 4 a good chunk of the week, has moved up subsequently. In our power rankings this year, Dallas was 2nd, 9th in strength of schedule, 1st in impressiveness of victories, 23rd in passing offense, 2nd in rushing offense, 26th in passing defense, 1st in rushing defense, 2nd in DVOA, 3rd offensively, and 17th defensively. Green Bay, 6th on our power rankings, 16th on strength of schedule, 7th on impressiveness of victories, 7th in passing offense, 20th in rushing offense, 31st in pass defense, and 8th in rush defense, 7th on DVOA, 4th offensively, and 20th defensively. What's very interesting here is that, again, if you want to be able to, particularly if you look at the numbers here, if you want to be able to exploit Green Bay defensively, it's easier to do so through the pass, but that's not really the route that Dallas tends to prefer. And, again, you look at the pass defense that Dallas has, and that is something that has been a little bit suspect from time to time, and that is something that Rodgers looks to be able to exploit going into this game. No Jordy Nelson, and we have seen over the course of the last 2 years or so, we don't have, or possibly no Jordy Nelson at any rate. I mean, with having left with the rib injury, at the very least, it's going to be a Jordy Nelson who I think we're going to say, if he plays, is a glorified decoy. I think that's basically what we're looking at here. A Green Bay team that does not have everybody out there at full staff. Look at what they were like last year without Jordy Nelson. Now, again, they have managed to diversify a little bit more so this year. They've been getting some decent tight end play as of late. They've been getting better play than in past years from Devontae Adams. That still is something that should basically be an issue for them, though, is proving that they can keep it going at the same point. I don't think they're going to be able to keep it going quite the same way, but I'm looking at this with the 4.5 here, and again, maybe I'm making the same mistake I made last week, ironically going against Green Bay, but in picking favorites in the other games over the weekend here, I look at this, Green Bay is certainly a live dog. I look at this, you're giving me 4.5, so they don't even have to win outright. Maybe I'm falling into the trap here, just not wanting to go all favorites, but I'm on Green Bay in this spot getting the 4.5.
Ha! You segued pretty nicely into the point I was going to lead off with here, which is if we're right about the first three games of the weekend, that means favorites will be 7-0 against the spread. I mean, well, you know, I didn't pick the Patriots. I'm not necessarily saying they're covered, so there's a chance. Maybe they're not, but like, you know, according to yourself, favorites would be, if you're right on the first three games, favorites are 7-0 against the number in the first seven games, which would be pretty crazy. And I think there's a good chance you could be right. I'm with you on Atlanta. I'm with you on Kansas City. And it's real shaky ground to handicap based on this because, to be honest with you, Kansas City and Pittsburgh, I was a little wishy-washy all week. But I agree with your rationale here. I think Green Bay is the livest dog of the week. You got Dak Prescott, a rookie, making his first playoff start. And when I go, when I like that, I wasn't trying to correct you about Jordy Nelson's status. I was kind of just agreeing with you that, yeah, that's a major loss.
Oh, okay.
Green Bay. One thing I am glad that you did not do was double down on that shitty hot take about Odell Beckham Jr. and the Giants receivers. The only thing they did wrong wasn't party. It was party with Justin Bieber, that tool, okay? If I was there on that boat, I would have taken all his coke and thrown him off the boat. Is what I would have done, okay? I mean, that's their biggest mistake, is hanging out with that tool, that knob. I mean, you talk about crappy music. Justin Bieber? Who likes that shite?
Exactly. You know, and when people bag on, like, real quality music like Nelson, I always say, hey, why don't you take a shot at Bieber? That's the real bad stuff.
Oh, boy. That's what you come back with. What I'm going to come back with here, and the real reason the New York Giants lost that game last week, is because Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie left the game. And I don't know if you're aware of this, Aaron Rodgers is very good at playing quarterback. And from that moment on, he just annihilated the Giants secondary. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can do the same against Dallas. I don't think he will without if Nelson's not 100%. Need to ask, go to the FDH judge here. I can pick a total and not the side here because I like the total a lot more than the side. If you make me pick the side, I'm with you on Green Bay. Okay, I'm going to go total here.
You did a teaser the last week. So.
Okay, yeah. All right. This is the highest total of the 8 playoff games so far, even higher than the Atlanta-Seattle game, which is in the Georgia Dome. I'm going under here. I think Green Bay's 38 points were a little misleading because of the Cromartie injury. Remember, Rodgers did get off to the slow start, and I just have some apprehension about the Dallas offense coming in this game. You talked about how they're going to run. You know, they got a lot of rookies in key positions. I don't think you're going to see both these teams going for 30 points here. I like the under at 52.5 in this game. A lot. If you make me pick the side, I'm definitely taking the points here, though, because, you know, Dallas was kind of – they were one of those teams, big jump from last year. Now they're all of a sudden number one. We see sometimes those are the teams that slip up in the playoffs. So, and I definitely don't want to pick against Aaron Rodgers right now the way he's playing quarterback. My God. I would love to see Green Bay win outright, too, just so that tool, Skip Bayless, his head can explode, maybe. What a knob he is. Have I made that point clear yet?
I certainly agree with that. I will say, too, I agree with you as far as, again, my gut feeling on the scenario for the game. For example, USA Today Sports Weekly picks a final score of Dallas winning 34-30. I don't see that. I do not see the Cowboys winning in a shootout because – to believe that that's going to be the case, I think, is to believe that the Packers' defense is just going to completely implode, and I don't see that. I mean, they're obviously not a model unit for the league. They're a lot like Atlanta in that they basically win off of their offense and try to be good enough defensively, but I don't think they're going to implode bad enough that Dak Prescott and company are going to be able to throw up a 34-burger on them, Kyle.
Yeah, and keep in mind, again, regular season rematch, and the first game was 30-16. Rematches tend to be, not always, I mean, there's no, you know, there's nothing, no trend is 100%, but regular season rematches tend to be lower scoring than the original. Get the toilet paper out of your mouth, Kyle. I got that one out, I think. So if you're looking at a baseline of, I think it was 46 points scored in the regular season, I mean, right there you got 6 points of value before the even projected decrease. So, yeah, I like the under here. I think especially, you know, no Nelson. I think the 38 points were a little misleading with Green Bay. They had that Hail Mary, which should have been defended a little bit better. You know, and Dallas, you know, I don't see, I see Green Bay's streak of 30-plus points definitely coming to an end here on the road. You know, they're such a dominant home team. But on the road, Aaron Rodgers has looked a little bit more mortal than he does in Lambeau.
I would tend to agree, and the interesting thing is it's kind of a reversal of some trends from past years, because if you remember, this is where Aaron Rodgers won his Super Bowl, and the talk at the time was, gee, for a team that plays on the frozen tundra, they're actually more of like a finesse-type team. Used to be, when they would get those indoors games, they would make the most of it, and again, I'd be interested to see the dome versus outside road splits. But you're right, Kyle. Away from Lambeau Field this year, interestingly enough, they've not been the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. You have Green Bay kind of significantly higher than I do, too. To me, Houston obviously is the outlier. No one cares about them. But of the other seven teams, I have Green Bay 7th in my rankings right now.
Okay.
I'm higher on Atlanta.
Sixth.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you had them 3rd or something. Who do you have 3rd? In your rankings?
I have Pittsburgh 3rd. It's New England 1, Dallas 2, Pittsburgh 3, Atlanta 4, Kansas City 5, Green Bay 6. So that's how they're shaping
and
up.
Seattle 7.
And
okay.
And Seattle 7. Yes. So going through for our picks this week, I'm on the first three games, the favorites and the dog Green Bay. And the last one, you, Kyle, are on Atlanta, Kansas City, and the under on the weekend's capper. So we will see how it goes. We will enjoy, of course, watching these games this weekend on the FDH Lounge's 10th anniversary weekend. Thank you so much, my man, as always, Kyle Ross. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the FDH Lounge.
This year, make every second count. So, no more fumbling through bags looking for keys, and no more getting lost on long weekend journeys. The Renault Capture, with a hands-free key card and 7-inch touchscreen with navigation, is now available with 0% APR representative from £159 per month. Excludes Expression Plus, Renault Finance, order and register by 31st of March. Deposit £3,903, 24 monthly payments of £159, final payment £7,716. Participating dealers only, subject to status, over 18s, T's and C's apply, see renault.co.uk/offers.